Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, October 21, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Illinois Impact, as state adds mitigation measures for four more counties, Champaign's positivity rate falls to 0.5%. We are going to be very careful about whatever guidance gets issued for school sports for the winter, Governor J.B. Pritzker said, after announcing that mitigation measures were on the way in four counties with troubling trends: Will, Kankakee, DuPage, and Kane. Douglas County health officials continued to urge residents to take preventive measures after reporting 22 new cases, giving it 220 the past 2 weeks. Vermilion County also added 22 cases, but saw its active total decline by 30 to 192. With just 6 new cases Tuesday, Champaign County's 7-day positivity rate fell from 0.6% to 0.5%, while the U of I campus rate held at 0.1%. The county rate without the U of I's testing totals, the figure the state will use in its mitigation metrics, is 4.0%. Active cases shrunk by 27 to 310 in Champaign County, leaving 11 zip codes with more than 2 active cases. 61820 Champaign, 68, down 4. 61866 Rantoul, 66, down 1. 61822 Champaign, 38, the same. 61821 Champaign, 34, down 5. 61802 Urbana, 31, down 3. 61801 Urbana, 23, down 6. 61853 Mahomet, 17, down 3. 61873 St. Joseph, 10, up 1. 61874 Savoy, 6, down 1. 61880 Tolono, 4, down 1. 61877 Sydney, 3, the same. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. Coronavirus response. 6 in satellite jail isolated after testing positive, by Deborah Pressey, Urbana. 6 people in custody at the Champaign County Satellite Jail in Urbana have tested positive for the coronavirus, according to Sheriff Dustin Hoyerman. All of the infected inmates have been isolated in separate spaces and away from other prisoners, he said. 5 of the cases are likely related, with the first discovered Sunday in a prisoner who was tested at Carle Foundation Hospital when he was taken there for a procedure. 4 other incoming prisoners who were in the same area were then tested and found to be positive, the sheriff said. The 6th case was found late Monday, and that is thought to be unrelated, Hoyerman said. None of the infected prisoners have symptoms, he said. Those 6 boost the total number of coronavirus infections at the jail to 15 since the first case there, May 27, he said. Hoyerman said precautions being taken since the start of the pandemic include keeping incoming prisoners in booking until they see a judge, then sending them to a 14-day housing before they are housed with others at the jail. We realize, with community spread, we wouldn't be able to keep it out of the jail, he said. But our goal was to keep it out of the general population, and I think we've been successful. What's cool in school? Villa Grove FFA. With farmers' help, interest still growing. By Dave Hinton, Villa Grove. Denny Reifsteck was an FFA member, as was his son. Today, his granddaughters are enjoying their role in Future Farmers of America. As a way to give back, Reifsteck, over the last 3 years, has donated the use of 3 acres of his farmland, where he allows the Villa Grove chapter to grow crops. While sophomore Will Jones, the chapter's farm operations manager, drove the combine to bring in the crops, sisters Alexa and Lydia Howard drove the grain cart that dumped the corn into a semi that took the crop to an area grain elevator. "He just really wanted to do something for the kids," said Marcy Howard, Reifsteck's daughter, and Alexia and Lydia's mother. "He knows how important the program is for the community and the kids. He wanted to help out." The 3-acre plot is marked off as part of a field, Reifsteck Farms. Marcy Howard said, when it is time to work on the plot, Reifsteck will contact the chapter, generally Will Jones, and they will head out to the field. "They usually get donations of the seed and chemicals," Howard said. Chapter advisor Callie Parr said the chapter also grows and harvests a 1/2 acre of sweet corn on the school grounds. As a sophomore, Jones has his share of responsibility with the crops. He is the contact man to make sure personnel can come out and spray the corn in the 3-acre field, and when it comes time to harvest the sweet corn by hand, to round up volunteers to hand-pick the crop. "We get around 100 dozen ears of sweet corn," he said. "We pick about 3 times, about a week apart. Getting everyone rounded up to be at one place at one time can be a challenge," he said. Parr said the Villa Grove community supports the local FFA chapter, but for 30 years, the chapter did not exist. When Parr came to teach at Villa Grove, she resurrected it in 2015. "The farmers in the Villa Grove area have been absolutely the best to work with," Parr said. "They've bent over backwards to let the kids get the experience." Parr said allowing the chapter to reap the benefits of the farm plots has been a tremendous financial success. Chapter members have been able to attend state and national FFA conventions, attend conferences and workshops, as well as compete in contests. The members also do a great deal of community work. This year, the chapter is building large planter boxes for the city that will be installed by the end of the month. The chapter will also prepare Thanksgiving food baskets for the needy. One thing Parr did when she came to Villa Grove is to change the titles of the chapter officers. "When I started the program, we started out with the traditional offices, and what we were finding is those titles and the job descriptions weren't really covering what we need to get done," she said. "We abandoned the old office titles and created titles more aligned with what the ag industry does." In addition to farm operations manager, the chapter has a public relations officer and a human relations officer. 1995 cold case. Gaining ground. Champaign County's Jane Doe has a name. Carrie Wyant. By Mary Schenck, Urbana. After more than 2 decades, authorities now know whose remains were found in a farm field near Thomasboro just before planting season in 1995. What they don't know is who killed Carrie Lynn Wyant, why she was killed, and why she was some 150 miles from what had been her home. "It's important that any suspicious death be investigated to our fullest ability. We owe it to her and to her family to bring them closure," Champaign County Sheriff Dustin Hoyerman said at Tuesday's news conference at the coroner's office. Coroner Dwayne Northrup and Sheriff's Investigator Dwayne Relfs, who have done the heavy lifting to identify remains found May 1, 1995, in a no-till cornfield southwest of Thomasboro, were with the sheriff. Thanks to their footwork and the generous donation of a television company that produces shows about unidentified people to finance a DNA profile, the few bones found in the field were identified as having come from Miss Wyant, who would be 49 today. She was 23 or 24 when she went missing, although given her lifestyle, no one officially reported her missing. "It certainly does seem like she was moving around a lot," Relfs said. A year ago, Northrup, Relfs, and Hoyerman announced that they had enough information to conclude from isotopes taken from tooth enamel and a rib among the remains that the woman likely hailed from and lived in the Midwest. When genetic genealogists confirmed her identity in late April, through DNA extracted from the bones compared with DNA uploaded to open-source genealogy sites, it turns out the isotopes were right. Northrup said they learned Miss Wyant was born in Galesburg in October 1971. She attended high school in Galva in southern Henry County, just northeast of Galesburg, but never graduated. Her parents, still living, said she left home around the age of 14 to live with other relatives for a short period, then possibly moved from that home to a shelter for poor people in Peoria. Her whereabouts were mostly unknown from late 1985 to 1989. But the investigators, aided by other police agencies in western Illinois, learned that she worked at several fast food places from 1989 to 1994. Those included Gustavo's Tacos, the Market Street Cafe, and Taco House in Galva, Hardee's in Galesburg, Somewhere in Abingdon, Dunkin' Donuts and BJ's Restaurant in Peoria, and even a gas station restaurant in Fina, Texas. Most of the people who managed those places could not be found, but Northrup and Relfs are hoping that some coworker along the way might have a piece of information that could help them find her killer. Last year, they reported that she died either by blunt force trauma or multiple gunshots, but declined to address the cause of her death on Tuesday, citing the ongoing criminal investigation. Detectives also found a former friend of Miss Wyant, who said she reappeared in Galesburg in early 1994 and was pregnant. She gave birth to a son in May 1994, but gave him to the friend with whom she was living in Kewaunee when she decided to join a carnival operating at the Henry County Fair in Cambridge, Illinois. The detectives later learned that her son was killed in a 2001 bicycle accident. It was that carnival that could have brought her to Champaign County, since the operator had bookings at the Fisher Fair in late July 1994, as well as in Springfield at the Sangamon County Fair and the Granite City Celebration. After Labor Day 1994, the carnival company headed south to the Little Rock, Arkansas area. The previously mentioned isotopes had suggested she may have lived long-term in northern Arkansas. Northrup said the owner of the carnival company did not remember Miss Wyant and could not locate employment records from 1994. Northrup said he, Relfs, and Tim Beckett, another Champaign County Sheriff's investigator, personally delivered the news of Miss Wyant's remains being identified to her parents in August. They had virtually no contact with her since 1985, when she moved out of their western Illinois home. So much time had gone by, they were surprised and gave us what information they could, said Ralphs, including confirmatory samples of DNA. Although the identification of the remains is huge, the detectives and the coroner need more. We are looking for anybody who might have known her or worked with her, Northrop said. Hoyerman said no detail is too small, and he asks anyone who has information to call his office at 217-384-1213. Hopefully, between her picture and her history, somebody would say, "I remember her," the sheriff said. "Think of how far we've come since we stood up here a year ago." Ask the admin, a daily question for Champaign-Urbana Public Health's Julie Pride. Question: of the positive cases in Champaign County, what percentage are asymptomatic? What about at UIUC? Are data available for surrounding counties with the same metric? Answer: about 80% of positive cases on diagnosis are either asymptomatic or very mildly symptomatic, fatigue being the most common. This is why wearing masks and distancing is so critical to slowing the spread of COVID-19. It is also why other public health measures of testing, contact tracing, isolation, and quarantine are so important. From the Our County section, OSF Healthcare. Security Breach Involved Fundraising Database by Deborah Pressey, Peoria. OSF Healthcare is informing patients of a data security breach that occurred earlier this year at one of its vendors, Blackbaud & Company, Incorporated. The Peoria-based health system, which operates hospitals and other services in Champaign and Vermilion counties, announced the breach Tuesday. Blackbaud notified its customers it discovered that an unauthorized individual gained access to Blackbaud's systems between February 7 and May 20, OSF said in an announcement. Blackbaud advised that the unauthorized individual may have acquired backup copies of databases used by its customers, including a backup of the database OSF uses for fundraising efforts. The incident didn't involve access to any of OSF's medical systems or electronic health records, the announcement said, nor was unauthorized access gained to encrypted financial information, including social security numbers, financial accounts, and credit card information. However, OSF said, it was determined in late August that the Blackbaud database involved in the incident did involve some patient information, including names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, dates of birth, treatment facilities, treating physicians, Department of Service, room numbers, and/or medical record numbers. OSF said Blackbaud, a leading cloud software company, provides cloud-based and data solution services related to OSF's fundraising activities. OSF said it took immediate action after learning about the breach and is notifying patients by letter and establishing a dedicated call center to answer questions about the incident. The call center is being staffed from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. weekdays. The number is 877-376-0079. Patients who think their information may have been involved in the incident are advised to monitor statements received from their healthcare providers. If they see services they didn't receive, they should contact the providers who issued the statements immediately, according to OSF. To avoid a repeat of this kind of incident, OSF also said it is assessing the security safeguards at Blackbaud and evaluating the data elements stored on the Blackbaud systems. Fatal Mahomet crash. State police shifting focus to vehicle would have sustained damage to the front right bumper, front right quarter panel, and the passenger side mirror was broken off. State police are asking anyone with information about the crash to contact them at 217-278-5000, or if wishing to remain anonymous, Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477, or 373tips.com, or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Jay Simpson, Jay's Take. Careful what you post. Social media can be a blessing and a curse, I know. I became hooked in high school, and I still post on Facebook and browse Instagram regularly. I take two-week breaks to clear my mind and stay productive. What I've learned is that social media can be used as a platform to show people's talents, but it also can give people a false reality. There are a lot of wealthy people on social media, and they like to let it be known with the pictures they post, large amounts of cash, designer clothes, exotic cars, and big, beautiful homes. Some of the people you see with these things can afford it and have put in the work to be able to flaunt it. Then you have the fakers, the ones who see rich people flaunting and try to imitate them. They will do anything in their power to fit in and make it look like they have the same lifestyle. And what about their priorities? They would rather spend their money on clothes and shoes to keep up with the Joneses rather than use it for something that would better benefit them, like a car or an apartment. Too many times I see people who are sleeping on a friend's couch spending $1,000 on shoes and clothes. I've been around both real millionaires and fakers. One thing's for sure, the fakers did a lot more to try to prove they weren't faking, which ironically made it clear as a day that they were. Social media has some youth thinking they have to grow up a lot faster than they do. Life isn't a race or a competition of who can post the flashiest things on Instagram. Coronavirus response. Mohamed Seymour nixes 5-day plan after lengthy talks. By Dave Hinton, Mohamed. Teachers who spoke during Mohamed Seymour's marathon school board meeting left little doubt about where they stood on a proposal to switch to 5-day in-person instruction for grades 6 through 12 that would require hiring an outside firm to conduct remote learning. Several teachers representing their grade levels said they did not want to see the change. Members of the public, however, were mixed in their comments. The board voted 4-3 against the proposal during a meeting that stretched past midnight Monday. Concerns expressed by the teachers included the inability of students to adequately distance themselves from each other. Also, students would be largely confined indoors for 5.5 hours, which goes against studies that show children learn better when they have an active day and aren't stuck indoors. Teachers were concerned about the health and safety of students and staff and about disregarding state and county health guidelines. Teachers decried comments made in September that they are being paid full-time for working part-time hours. They said the opposite is the case, that some are having to work 70 to 80-hour weeks because they have to teach both in-person and remotely. Several students and adults spoke against the plan because it would mean children learning remotely from someone they don't know and that they want to retain their current teachers. A preschool teacher said social distancing is difficult for students who also don't always keep their face masks on. They also need help using the bathroom, and some need to be lifted. One parent who spoke in favor of the 5-day plan discussed the economics of lost education. "It is real," he said, noting a study found that each additional year of education raises an individual's pay by 10%. Another parent said, while a 5-day in-school plan is preferable, public safety shouldn't be risked for a few more hours of in-person instruction, especially with COVID-19 caseload currently being used, but directed the administration to conduct a survey and determine how to improve it. The board last month voted to approve a 4-day in-school instruction plan that would begin in January. McComb, the board president, said parents had sent numerous emails on the proposal and their opinions were evenly split. "We had representatives of all different philosophies of what we should be doing," McComb said. "Most of those parents were just good people who were concerned about their kids, I think." He said he was concerned that some comments made by the public about teachers were pretty judgmental. "I think that's unfortunate," he said. "Teachers are generally concerned. We need to do our best to try to understand each other here." He said that many students have struggled academically under the current hybrid plan, with double and triple the number of D's and F's among junior high and high school students, respectively. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, October 21, 2020. Please stay tuned.